We're talking to William Cumming. Mr. Cumming has been a druggist in the town of Holton. I believe he celebrated his 62nd anniversary in the drug business recently.
62 years, yeah.
What made you decide to be a druggist?
Well, I had an ambition and a desire within me to follow up the profession of pharmacy, or I did want to find an opportunity to get into that profession. And it's one of the oldest professions that we know about, I believe. It's mentioned back in the Bible in the Old Testament days. In the book of Ecclesiastes, we find these words. The dead flies in the ointment of the apothecary causes it to send forth an unsavory odor, as does a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. Now, we find these words, and it mentions the apothecary. Although some translations do use the word perfumer, but it nevertheless, it was a pharmacist. So we can go back to 2,100 years at least, which is in the book of Ecclesiastes, and find that the apothecary was in operation at that time, but some authorities place it much further back. So it is an old profession, and I had an ambition along this line, and the door was open for me, and April 25th, 1910, when I went into one of the local drugstores here, had that chance and privilege, and I was to become a full-fledged pharmacist, as I had in my mind, at least. I remember the man who went in the door with me on that morning was an electrician who worked with my father, and he made the remark to Mr. Hannigan, who was one of the druggists there at that time, "What do you propose to do with this young guy? Do you think you can ever make anything out of him?" And I thinks to myself, "I'll show you whether you will or not. So if you get, okay, you wait and see. I'll certainly make the try and effort anyway." In those days, it was customary, due to the fact that the fathers and mothers did not have the means, the financial means at least, to send their boys or girls to a college. Therefore, an apprenticeship in the drugstore was quite prevalent, and you could do that in the state of Maine at that time. It was required that you spend 4 years in a drugstore and do your studying in the material that you might be able to obtain, and the various literatures and books that were available at that time, plus the practical experience. Now, the work involved at that time was, of course, sweeping and dusting and unpacking freight. And then we had the bottles came packed in swale hay. And you can imagine the unsanitary conditions that existed there when the bottles were packed in swale hay, and that hay would get into the bottle and you couldn't get it out. But my job was to use soap suds and buckshot to get the hay out and then stand it on pegs, a rack, for them to dry out. But they were still unsanitary. Today, they all come packed in nice cartons, thoroughly sterilized and ready to be used. It was quite a contrast to what it was in those days. I had no thought for salary as to what I would get when I went to work there. But the salary decided upon was $3 a week.
Oh.
And I went to work at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we kept open till 10 and later at night, plus every Sunday. And my work consisted of looking after the old soda fountain, which many times caused me to be there at very, very late after the closing of the store. But be that as it may, I accepted all of this and didn't mind it at all, and I would have worked for nothing for the sake of having the privilege and opportunity of getting somewhere, as I thought. Now, in those days, we find that the prescriptions written by the physicians were quite different than what they are today. The physician in those days had to know all these drugs very well. They come from all parts of the world: Africa, Asia, Europe, South America, West Indies, the East Indies, China. Every part of the world these drugs came from. And each drug consisted of certain active ingredients which were beneficial in the treatment of human ailments. Now, these varied in strength, and we find that many of those drugs were not aged properly. They were not grown under the best of conditions. Therefore, the active constituents of that drug varied a great deal, so that your patient would not always get the same strength, even though he was taking the same dosage continually. It varied considerably. In other words, they were not standardized. And this came about, well, they started standardizing previous to this, but a great deal of work was done till finally the drugs were more or less standardized and they were accepted and used, and you had the regular strength as it should be. There was quite a few doctors in the town at that time. There's been quite a change in this respect over the years. The family physician, of course, would call to the home day or night. He would spend time there with the patient. There was a close contact and a fellowship, and he come to know the families and each member of the family. In other words, he had a very close relationship with the families of the town. These things have changed. It's true to a certain extent yet, but the closeness, I feel myself personally, does not exist as it did in those days. And as far as the druggist was concerned, he too was prevailed upon to offer advice, sometimes to prescribe, and his opinion was sought after, and he was more or less looked on as a co-laborer with the physician, and he did do his part in that respect. Now, we were called out many times in the night, on Sundays, holidays. This does not bother in any way whatsoever. In fact, we ought to ask ourselves the question, why are we here? What are we doing here? What am I supposed to be? What does my life amount to? Well, I've often said that the man who uses his God-given talents, his time and his energy and his talents to make this world a better place in which to live, he's truly successful. So if you have the privilege and the opportunity to render a service, then render it at all times. And I never felt put out in any way being called out at night, on Sunday or holidays. And I've made trips of great distances when it was necessary. I recall once that I made a 25-mile trip for a man on a Sunday who was out of his medication, and he did require it, and it was very necessary that he received it. So I don't hesitate under those circumstances at all.
Do druggists do that anymore now, Mr. Connolly?
No, I don't believe that's done too much now. Although a few years ago, I had one of my clerks call me up one day when I was home to dinner and said, Mr. So-and-so is here and he wants his medicine. And I said, I can't be down there until about 20 minutes from now. And she said he couldn't wait for to mail it to him. He had a heart condition and I knew it, so after I hung up the phone, I thinks, well, I can't mail it to him because he happened to be in the town of Haynesville, and I knew by the time he got it, he might be dead or something could happen, and I would blame myself for not getting down there to the store. So late that afternoon, about 4 o'clock, I called my wife and told her to get ready, and we drove down 25 miles to Haynesville, and I delivered his medication. He looked at me when I come in the yard and said, what are you doing down here? I said, I came down with your medication. I thought you needed it. And he was very much put out to think that I had done this, but I softened it up by saying, no, I just wanted to ride, and I was out for riding, so I brought it along.
He didn't really want to be beholden to you, did he?
No. So anyway, those things happen over the years from time to time, but they never put me out at all. I felt it a privilege and enjoyed doing it.
You mentioned that that the people looked to you to prescribe sometimes. Was there a legal limit to what you could prescribe?
Well, as a matter of fact, that is not in our field. We are not supposed to prescribe. That is a matter for the physician. But back in those days, things were not as strict as they are now, and we had some leeway, and we did, from time to time, recommend certain preparations or concoctions, or we even put up certain remedies for these people. But when you do that sort of thing, that's not your field, and there is a possibility of getting into difficulties. And there's been great changes in that direction. The public is protected today by regulations and laws, and it is well and good that it is so. I think the changes in that direction are very good and fine. I think back to the days when the B&A Railroad had several trains in here every day, up and down. There were long lumber operations up on the Ashland Branch. The mills were operating there. There was no labor restriction coming from Canada to Maine or the United States. They could come in here and work in the mills and get their money and go back home. But usually they came out to the towns when they made so much or they wanted a little vacation. And they would spend their money when they come out, turn around and go right back in again. And some of them, of course, in those days were imbibing considerable intoxicating liquors. Therefore, we got the name in the lower end of the town, the Tough End.
Oh.
And it might have been Tough End in those days because I have seen some pretty wild escapades and certain things that have happened in that locality. But that is no longer true. You couldn't say that that is Tough End now. But I can remember back in those days.
What years? About in what period would this have been?
1910 to 1920. Mm. From 1910 to 1920, it was rather wild down there, especially on Saturday nights. I used to save the electric light bulbs and put them on the shelf in the back room. And when the fight occurred on Saturday night in the alleyway, I would open the back door and throw the bulb against the building next door. It'd make a loud explosion, and it would break up the fight every time, break it up every time.
They'd think they were getting shot.
And I have seen this happen. I happened to come back from work one evening, supper time. I returned at 6 o'clock, and the proprietor of the store was ready to depart to his supper. So I came in and he went out. I had not been in the store over 5 minutes when there was a great crash. There was a jewelry store next door. And on that wall hung a nice great big jeweler's clock. And I assumed that the clock had fell off the wall. So I rushed out of the store and looked, and here was a great big hole through the plate glass window where somebody had thrown something right through the window. I stepped over to the lunch cart, which was next to the building, and a man came out and he says, "That fella just threw a glass of water through that plate glass window." I called the police. The police came down. He stepped to the door and says, "You come with me." The man says, "No, I'm not going with you. I'm going to eat my hot dog and drink my coffee." Yes. So the policeman stood there. He drank his coffee, ate his hot dog. He said, "Okay." He got up and he come out and he walked over to the window he'd just broken. It had just been painted that day. I remember it was green in color. He took a match and scratched it the full length of the window that he could reach, lit his cigarette, and he said, "Okay," and he went up with him. He got 30 days and a fine. When he came back, he says, he come in the store and he says to me, "I made an awful mistake. I meant it for this store." He says, "I come in and I ask for a bottle of beef, wine, and wine, and Mr. Monroe would not sell it to me. So he said I was going to get even, but I missed the target."
Right.
And it went into the jewelry store.
Oh.
Well, that's just a sample of some of the things that went on in the lower section of the town. And you could not blame the people for calling it Tough End. But that is no longer true.
I knew it had been called Tough End, but I never really knew the reason. Tell me something, this beef, iron, and wine makes me think of patent medicines in general. Beef, iron, and wine, did that have a fairly high alcoholic content?
As I remember it, I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 30-some percent. It might have been higher, it might have been lower. I can't just remember. But nevertheless, in those days, you must understand that liquor was prohibited.
Oh, yeah.
And it was not supposed to be sold, but they would drink anything and everything that had an alcoholic content, regardless of the other constituents in the preparation. And sometimes, I have known it, when we had put an external use label not to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be one guy in the party that would sample it, and if it worked, hooray boys, they would all go. But we would not sell preparations for that purpose if we knew it. And many times we got into difficulties with the parties due to the fact of refusing them. And I've had that experience many, many times.
Of course, 30% alcoholic content is three times as much as a general wine would have. That really is.
Yeah.
But these people who were drinking that, I suppose, were keeping themselves healthy with the beef and iron and getting a little stimulant out of the wine.
Yes, the other ingredients in these preparations sometimes, they did not cause serious trouble, but over a period of time, some of them would. But however, that's what existed at that time.
There's always been a great deal of joshing about Lydia Pinkham. Now, didn't that have an alcoholic content?
It did, but they never bothered that. The drinkers never bothered that.
Not
that
the men, but women who were taking it had a little glow on quite often and never knew it.
Yes, that did have an alcoholic content.
Yes.
It did. But many liniments and other preparations were used to drink by these individuals that worked in the lumber mills. They could get their hands on it and would imbibe.
Well, as you say, too, it was the only alcoholic beverage they could get around, wasn't it? I mean, there was
no
liquor sold.
Well, I could make quite a story on that subject relative to the drug stores, but I do not feel that perhaps it would be wise to do so, although it might, I don't know. But there are parties living today who would have relatives and people, individual in the town, which might not be well to do so, but that is another story that I could tell about perhaps some other time.
That would be dispensing alcohol for drinking purposes, huh?
Yeah, you see, I do remember in 1917 and 18 when the flu was raging, the story came out that you were, or the ruling of whatever it was, came out that, well, everybody thought that if they had a little brandy or a little gin or a little whiskey in the house during that flu age, that would cure everything and prevent them from contacting this particular disease. So it was quite customary to send to Boston for their intoxicating beverages, and many people who never drank in their life sent to Boston to have the liquor come, and it came by express. And the story came out that that by going to the physician and getting a prescription and pasting the prescription on the outside of the liquor package, it would come through all right without seizure and nobody would bother it. This worked very well for a short period of time, but eventually some very energetic sheriff down to Northern Maine Junction seized all of the liquor packages and printed the names in one of the local papers in Bangor, giving the names of all the individuals who had sent for liquor. Methodists, Baptists, Presbyterians,
all. Must have been a scandal.
And that was something. But that was in 1918.
Yeah.
But everybody just laughed about that. But however, that was one of the things that took place. And I might remark in regard to that particular time, the doctors were worn ragged. Dr. Ebbett had three horses. Dr. Gibson had, I think, two horses. Dr. Donovan had two, and they were going day and night. And I remember that I was working alone in the store at the time, and I couldn't get drugs fast enough. There was calls for camphorated oil, muscarine, muscarol, and whatnot, and nutmegs to tie around your neck with a string.
Right.
These things, people would come in and they had certain old whims in regard to certain things that would cure all diseases, and I remember one fellow that had nutmegs tied around his neck for 2 or 3 years afterwards. So,
I never heard of the nutmeg cure before.
Well, that was true. But the doctors were very, very busy, and I have seen as high as 6 funerals in one day. Whole families were wiped out, sometimes 2 or 3 in a family, due to that flu that came about in 1918, I think it was. I was going home one night about 11 o'clock. I'd been working all day. In fact, I was working alone for 3 solid weeks. I had no help whatever except for a little girl, Avery Monroe, who was assisting me and running errands. The proprietor was away for that period of time, so I had my dinner, my supper brought in, and stayed there till closing time each day. And this was a very busy time, so I was going home one night at 11 o'clock. I came up in front of Feely's drugstore, and Dr. Donovan says, "Would you come in and put this medicine up for me?" I said, "Sure." So I went into Feely's drugstore. He says, "Well, you find the stuff." He sat down in the chair with a great big fur coat on. He'd just come from Amity. And he says, "I've got to go back again with this medication." So I did not know where the preparations were, the drugs were, but I finally found them and got it together. And he took it and drove back to Amity. Mm-hmm. Now, these are the things that occurred in those days. There has been sacrifice. There has been devotion on the part of various individuals. And I think it is well and good. I wish more of it existed today. We're living in an era or time when everything is so speedy that sometimes we miss the vital and the good and the fine things. And I won't say that they don't exist. They do exist. They still exist. But I think perhaps more so at that particular time.
People don't do for each other as they used to. Was that flu epidemic, was that the biggest thing of that type that had ever hit the town?
Yes, I think it was at that time. There was another incident. They imported a lot of parrots, birds from South America, and they developed psittacosis disease, mm-hmm. and some individuals in the town contracted that disease and passed away. I remember that there was a good deal of consternation and quite a lot being said about it at that time. I might mention the fact, though, that there were individuals in Washington or nearby who were working on certain drugs that would take care of this particular disease or ailment. And I think one or two of those scientists or men died in their research work. Oh. But this is the sacrifice that has been made many times over the year in order that the public could have those drugs which would deal with these serious diseases.
That parrot fever, that was all over the country, wasn't it?
Yes, a good deal. Because
it happened, they got a parrot up here even.
Oh,
somebody
yes.
Somebody did. Huh?
Yes, they did. Now, it wasn't advertised too much as to, some is quite a question whether it was the psittacosis that took these people out or not, but these people did have the parrots.
Yes.
And so many thought that that was it. Whether it was or not, I won't say, but however.
We mentioned patent medicines. I know that drug stores had patent medicines many, many years ago, but wasn't your usual drugs were really in your glass jars, weren't they? People made up their own prescriptions a lot of times rather than taking the patent medicine, didn't they?
Yes, there was a great deal of that done. Certain drug houses sold the bark, roots, and herbs loose, and also in packages, 1 ounce packages, and with the directions on the package relative to how much should be used, and they steeped them like you would tea and take a certain portion or dosage of that for the different ailments that one might have.
Did you ever buy any herbs locally? Did any people here ever collect herbs for you and bring them in?
No, I never had that experience myself. That was done in other years. Yes, that was done. I have more or less a history of pharmacy in pictures over a great many years put out by Park Davis and Company. And that tells the story in regard to that situation. Now, I did not run into that, but we did sell bark, roots, and herbs to people who demanded them or called for them, and they had generally formulas published in books of different kinds for this, that, or the other ailment. So therefore,
they had remedies too. They had sort of prescriptions that had been passed down through their families. Were there any favorites that you remember, say for cough medicine? Or?
I don't know as I have any knowledge right off in regard to that, but there was a great many cough mixtures in that day. Now, we had one in our store called ammonia mixture, consisted of ammonium carbonate, compound syrup of squill, fluid extract of licorice, and antimonium potassium tartrate. And we put this up, but it was not stable. It would not keep any length of time, but it was very efficient and very good and seemed to do the work very well. And we undertook to get this manufactured by a drug company and put up in bottles, but they would not do it due to its unstable condition or composition, so that we did not do that. But we had many of our own preparations and put it under our own name.
Was that one that you fellas had developed yourselves?
Yes.
And it was a good one.
Yes, it was a good cough syrup, a very good one. And that happened among in regard to many preparations. And then you could have a drug company that would put up these preparations under your name.
Yes.
But the laws and regulations changed over the years so that this is quite impossible now to do that. In fact, some of the larger drug houses have gone out of business. I won't say larger, but medium drug houses have gone out of business and recalled a great many of their preparation and no longer make them. Because the FDA is more or less the watchdog, and they protect the public at all times. Even the modern drugs of today that are put out, they are put through their paces and in the clinics, perhaps, and other ways, and finally to the general practitioner, and he uses them for a year or two. Even now, drugs are recalled due to the side effects or other reasons to protect the public.
It takes a long time sometimes to know just exactly what the side effects will be, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Indeed.
We were interested, too, in narcotics. Years ago, there wasn't much protection on narcotics. You could sell almost anything that you wanted, couldn't you?
Well, when I went in, up until 1916, yes, you could sell tincture of opium or laudanum, as it was called, morphine, codeine, or any of the narcotics, the potent narcotics, over the counter by taking the person's name and address and the date. In that way, they could obtain it.
Mm-hmm.
Many in those days have become addicted to these drugs, but no, not the young people. It was the older folks who had sickness or disease or ailments that was a great deal of pain, and the doctor would prescribe these narcotics, and eventually they would become addicted. So we did have quite a number of folks that were addicted. But in 1916, the Harrison Law went into effect, and when that went into effect, you no longer could buy it over the counter. You had to have a doctor's prescription, filled the same day it was written, dated properly, the doctor's registry number on it, the patient's name and address, and all this information before you could get the drug, which was a wonderful thing. And up for a great many years, from 1916 up into late 30s or early 40s, we had no great problem like it was in those days with the narcotic drugs. But all at once, we find this what is taking place today in the nation with perhaps the less potent drugs, but heroin is one of the principal ones. And I might say that the law in the United States is not supposed to be any heroin in the country. It's not even used in medication, prescription.
It is in the prescription drug at all?
No, heroin is not supposed to be used at all.
In other words, it's not good for anything except
it
for
is
addiction.
Good. It is good
it
for
is.
Something, but the cause of its
ill
effect, they had banned it. But the illegal sources from European and other foreign countries and the possibility of the dollars and cents there for somebody, they take that chance and import it and try to make a buck, and they certainly do.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and till today, it's a very serious situation.
Of course, that Harrison Act really developed from the spread of the opium trade, didn't it? Wasn't
yes.
it opium that was the big drug in the early 1900s?
Yes, you see, the opium, the opium poppy, Papaver somniferum, that's grown, and they incise these poppies and the exudation that comes out, and in that is your opium and your morphine, your codeine, and all these other narcotic drugs. And
are they all derivative
yes,
of opium?
Yes, those that I named.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have a picture here of an opportunity for certain individuals
mm-hmm.
to make a fast dollar, I suppose, at the expense of individuals and people.
Was most of that opium in the early 1900s, was most of that coming in from China?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, well, some from over in some of the European countries, Turkey possibly,
mm-hmm.
I've just forgotten, but however, yes, it had come from China, that's right.
Of course, we had trade going back and forth all the time. It was very easy to get it back here. There was no customs inspection in those days.
Well, not like it is today.
No,
not at all. So I feel that there's been some great advances made in the field of pharmacy and in the protection of the public and also in the treatment of various diseases. I have a little portion here from the history of pharmacy that was put out by the Park Davis and Company some time ago relative to the active constituents and standardization of pharmaceuticals. Would you like to have me enter that in there? Despite the professional skill and integrity of 19th century pharmacists, seldom did two preparations of vegetable drugs have the same strength. Even though prepared by identical processes, crude drug plants varied widely in active alkaloidal or glucosidal content, and this variation, reflected in the galenical preparations made from them, caused great concern to the prescribing physician and to the manufacturing pharmacist. Patients for whom such preparations were prescribed might receive the normal, expected benefits, no benefits at all, or distressing effects due to toxic overstrength.